This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org.
At their meeting on September 7, 2011, the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors heard a progress report on the local Climate Action Planning Process, or LCAP. Charlottesville Tomorrow's recording begins with Albemarle County's Environmental Compliance Manager, Andy Lowe.
Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to present this report on behalf of the Local Climate Action Planning Process Steering Committee. I also want to thank colleagues at City of Charlottesville and University of Virginia who helped throughout this entire process, and a lot of public support in the steering committee and associated work groups that gave great effort in the last 2 years for this effort. The local climate action planning process has been a joint effort by Albemarle and Charlottesville and the University of Virginia. All three entities have also been working on separate initiatives regarding climate protection and energy management. In 2006, Charlottesville made public commitment to the in a form of a resolution supporting Mayor's Climate Action Climate Protection Agreement by the U.S. Conference of Mayors. Similarly, Albemarle County in 2006 passed a resolution supporting the intent of that same resolution out of the U.S. Mayor's Climate Agreement. Also in December of 2007, Albemarle supervisors passed the U.S. Cool Counties Climate Stabilization Declaration, resolution supporting that. And so at the same time, the university had also been working on emissions studies and energy reduction strategies. So with the interest of all three community members, entities, trying to achieve similar goals, an effort to work collaboratively on these issues was floated. The slide before you shows a 2000 baseline study of emissions data, and this includes our entire region, the city and county. One thing to note about this, the University of Virginia is included in the commercial slash institutional red section, 28%. Roughly, UVA consists of 10% of the overall energy and emissions associated with our region. And as you'll see, the largest individual sector is transportation. Commercial without UVA would be around 18%, UVA itself 10%, and residential sector 24%. A big takeaway from this chart is the municipal sector, the purple sector at the top of the pie chart, is a total of 4%, and that includes the City of Charlottesville and Albemarle County local government and school operations. And so out of the whole emissions and energy used in our region, municipal government consists of a very small portion of this. One thing to look at as we move forward also is the combined built environment, which would include residential and commercial. And so excluding UVA once again from the commercial of 18% and adding that to the residential sector, we get a built environment of 42%, which shows the two largest sectors being built environment and transportation. So this
let me ask you a question while
yes,
you're on
sir.
That. go back to that pie chart. When you talk about reducing overall emissions and energy by 80%, are you talking about each one of these sections would be reduced 80%?
No, sir. The idea would be that the entire pie would shrink. It wouldn't necessarily all have to come out of one section or 80% come out of every section equally.
But you're talking about the entire pie shrinking by 80%. So what we see there would be 20% of what was there now.
For our Cool Counties resolution, which is the non-binding resolution that we supported, the goal was an 80% reduction by 2050 community-wide. And so that would be Albemarle County's geographic area, which is slightly different than this combined chart that's on the screen. The numbers may change a little, but yes, it's the 80% is community-wide, and so everything would shrink. And so the total of this pie chart is a per unit of metric tons of equivalent carbon dioxides, and so that unit would reduce by 80%.
Why does that appear that you combine two things which are not combinable? You're saying energy and emissions. The resolution deals with emissions. It doesn't deal with energy use. So you know,
I just
want to point out it does not say this does not presume an 80% reduction in energy use. It presumes an 80% reduction in emissions. And you.
No,
you
it says CO2 baseline. So I thought that's what we were talking about.
We're talking about emissions, not energy use. In other words, if you use, for example, there's an article here that you know Chesapeake has converted all their vehicles, their trucks to compact natural gas, which produce a lot less emissions, and also they're going to save $14,000 a year per truck, $740,000 a year, according to Virginia Town and Country magazine this month. There are all kinds of ways you can reduce emissions without reducing energy use. So I just point that out. There's no presumption here that energy use itself is going down by some drastic amount. In fact, energy use, we know, increases. There are people using more computers, which use energy, et cetera. The question is, for example, when car emission standards increase, that reduces the emissions from the transportation sector. We're going to have some small input into that, but basically to the extent that emissions are reduced from transportation vehicles, it's probably going to be a result of raising standards. By the federal government, some action we'll probably have little part in.
Well, CAFE standards have already changed.
Right, they just announced new standards recently.
That was by presidential decree or something, wasn't it? It wasn't something passed by the legislature.
And it's been done that way. It's done that way under Nixon. It was done that way, you know, et cetera. Every president.
That doesn't mean it's right, no matter who does it.
Every president has set standards, but you know, the fact is that today we have fleets of vehicle. We used to have fleets of vehicle out there that got, you know, 6-7 miles to the gallon. And burn leaded gasoline, and you know, but for some action by somebody, you know, we might well still be there. I don't know that there's a civilized country in the world that doesn't have some kind of emission standards on vehicles.
But why is the CO2 emissions the sole measurement of whether or not we're protecting our environment? I mean, that seems I'll come back to that, and I'm just wondering why that is.
This is actually an equivalent carbon dioxide equation, so it takes into account all greenhouse gases, nitrous oxide, sulfur oxides, methane, and carbon dioxides, and equates those to what they represent as a carbon dioxide. So it's there are other chemicals, other particulates, matter that are in the atmosphere, but this just gives it a carbon equivalent.
And who defines that? I mean, why did we decide as a county that that's the best way to measure our energy efficiency?
I believe the scientific community and international, national, EPA, have researched the carbon equivalence methods and everything. So that's set at a very high level scientifically.
I think it's just a way to discuss something. Instead of having 15 pie charts, you figure out a way to combine the information into one, and it's a way to look forward, say, well, here's where we are now, and in order to have a better future, we should try to improve our efficiency and therefore change this pie chart.
I'm asking that because there seems to be a lot of discussion in the scientific community these days is how much of this is man-made as opposed to natural, if you're taking all greenhouse gases. I mean, and yet we're concentrating on man-made.
We're associating with man-made.
Which is the only thing we have any control over, obviously.
Say we can't really control what.
But there is some argument in the scientific community that I'm seeing and reading about these days that said if we did away with all of the human-generated carbon emissions, it would be minuscule in terms of what impact it would have on our environment.
But
I think that's one person.
It's not just one person. I mean, there's a lot of literature.
One side of it. That's what it
happened.
I was. You said that this. You're drawing a distinction between energy and greenhouse emissions, and this chart that I'm looking at on the screen says it's basically talking about emissions. Correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. If you go to the, I'll flip back through my notes. It said that. Let me find it 1 second. I'm looking at the resolution that was passed. Whereas the state of California has mandated statewide reduction of greenhouse gas emissions to below to 80% below 1990 levels, so it is talking not. This isn't talking about energy. This is talking about reducing that greenhouse gas pie that you see here to 80, shrinking it to 80%, 20% of what you see now.
Emissions.
Right. Which is greenhouse gases.
You might discuss the relationship between energy and emissions.
But we adopted that.
That's what's confused.
Okay.
That's what we're talking about.
It seemed like the discussion got changed from gases to energy, and I just wanted to make sure I understood that this was.
And so, as you look at at this chart, the residential, the commercial, the transportation deals with an energy-based emissions. The residential sector is using electricity, natural gas to heat and cool homes, light homes. Transportation is using diesel and unleaded fuels for transportation purposes. And so, if you look at waste, like the methane that comes off of the Keene landfill. Is also a greenhouse gas pollutant, but it's not associated with energy use. And so 87% of, this is a national statistic, 87% of emissions are related back to energy use. And so as you look at our chart, other does include agricultural usage, but our emissions based on energy use is more like 92-93%, something like that. So energy and emissions are correlated, and emissions is a byproduct of energy use.
So you're saying also then that we need to reduce our energy consumption by 80% also?
Technologies can do this.
You can switch from one form of energy. If coal burning, for example, produces much more emissions than natural gas does. And the cars that get better mileage produce a lot less emissions than cars that don't get good mileage. Obviously, wind, solar, geothermal, and those things have virtually no emissions. So, I mean, it's not nobody projects that you're going to reduce energy use by 80%. What this is it was a non-binding a statement of intent, a statement to reduce the pollutants, and some of which result from energy use, and it's done, and you've created an equivalency for CO2 emissions, as he said, which actually, to the extent you have nitrogen oxide or sulfur dioxide, etc., those things are just converted to CO2 units. So you've got one. You can talk about it in terms of a single unit, much like when we talk about stormwater, we talk about residential units. Equivalencies. So a commercial development of a certain size might be comparable to 120 residential units, RDUs. That's all they've done here so that there is a reasonable standard of discussing what emissions are.
So, again, both reductions in energy use and reductions in things like vehicle emissions altogether are the things we want to reduce to get this 80% goal according to what's in place now. So they're both
intertwined
there. And the way
to probably describe it even more in a more clearer way would be increases in energy efficiency so that you get the same job done using less with
modern technology. Will reduce emissions and help us achieve the goal.
Your use, but it doesn't seem like it's.
I hear what you're saying. But let's say that we converted all the vehicles and everything that we fly, drive, or whatever to electricity. All right, you still have to produce electricity. And so, and you have to have. You have to have.
The emissions of that are tiny compared to the fuel.
Anyhow, to me, it just seems like.
It might be useful if we continue with the presentation. And you definitely have two things before you. One is LCAP has some recommendations, which are mostly sort of voluntary suggestions and guidelines. And then, of course, the Cool Counties is where you set a goal. If you think 80% is not appropriate or something, that's the other part of this discussion.
Sure.
So if we let Andy do this, I think it's going to work right into some of these questions.
I won't interrupt you, Andy. Go ahead.
Well, no, it's very interesting because I just heard the statistic that Dominion has to produce three times the amount of energy at its plants because its distribution system is so inefficient that only a third of the energy actually makes it to your house, your business. And so the end user only sees a third of what they're actually producing at the plant. So that would be a energy reduction, just a technology fix that could help change emissions levels drastically. So it's very interesting what you bring up. That brings me into part of what the Local Climate Action Planning Process Steering Committee, and I want to start calling it LCAP if you don't mind. It's pretty much a mouthful. This committee was facing a lot of interesting and issues that really they accepted that they didn't have to address. We quickly changed from looking at it on a climate action basis to studying the energy use and stuff associated with that. It also it was started as a local movement with the three entities, and so as you see in this slide, the three entities use the Planning and Coordinating Council structure, going to PAC Tech for guidance and the full PAC in some cases for guidance. This body supported it also in January 2009 with a resolution that's included in your packet. And so did the city of Charlottesville with a similar resolution. And that resolution also started the process of working totally working collaboratively on these issues, energy efficiencies and climate protection, which also led to an effort to work together on a grant application to SEIA to form the Local Energy Alliance Program, which also took place in this January 2009 to May 2009 timeframe. In May 2009, an invitation letter for the steering committee was sent out by both the city executive and county executive of the time, and it's in the packet with your executive summary. It doesn't look totally visible here, but Mr. Gary O'Connell and Mr. Bob Tucker were the ones signing it. UVA was participatory in this too, as far as identifying individuals and what the charge would be. Also, in this two-year time frame, from January 09 to today, actually, it's a little over 2 years, but the steering committee first met in August of 2009, so it really wrapped up a two-year time period. But a community workshop was also given in this building right here. This auditorium served as a venue for the community to come out and find what the planning process was doing and give feedback on some of those issues. And we got great feedback on both the materials that were being presented and areas in which we needed to look. And then that brings us to today. We've also submitted this report to PAC, City Council, had the presentation last night, and now the Board of Supervisors is also getting this report. As you see in the report, the steering committee members, this is a wide range, broad spectrum of community members. They were picked because they represented the community at large and specific sectors of that. There's members as university leaders, elected officials, business leaders, and scientific expertise. Communities that are representative include sectors of home builders, chamber of commerce, environmental interest, and the community at large. And to their credit, like I said, their first meeting was August 2009, and their last meeting was July 2011, and every one of them stuck with this process and gave their input throughout the whole time. So it really was something that they felt strongly about. And as you can see in the letter that they've submitted associated with the report, every one of them signed it and back the consensus of what the report is. Also to this structure was work group structure that provided some of the hard research and information to the steering committee. This also comprised over 50 local individuals, both practicers of energy efficiencies like home builders and businesses associated with buildings, to transportation and experts and energy experts in general. And they provided that expertise for our steering committee to have the most readily available information at their hands. One of the first products that came out of this process is a five-part framework representing our community energy profile. And like I said, emissions are closely related to the way energy moves throughout the community. So it represents here as far as how energy in different sectors are represented. And it's not a mistake that energy in the built environment and energy and mobility are the first two, because as you remember from the chart, they were our biggest users as well. And they also have the structure in which things can start being addressed more quickly.
I'm sorry, I know we're trying not to interrupt you, but I have a question on this particular slide before you go off of it. I don't see a single thing on here that we haven't been practicing for many, many years before we put this group together. I'm losing that somewhere, that these are all new ideas that we haven't been actively pursuing for some time, both in the private sector and in the public sector.
And part of this process has shown that a recommitment to the areas in which we have focused previously, such as building to green standards and promoting energy efficiencies for our residents, was reconfirmed through this process. I believe there have been a few new items attached, and these are high level topics. You'll see later on we get more in the weeds as far as some of the things, but the steering committee did not want to be prescriptive on getting down to the minute detail of how the council, the supervisors, or UVA should attack each of their entities. They left it at a high level and principle level recommendations so that we as a community internally can choose how to move forward with things. So, but yes,
I'm really mentioning this for a reason, because the next subject we're going to talk about after we get through the LCAP report is Cool Counties. And I'm trying to, in my own mind, determine what Cool Counties had to do with any of this. What the whole concept of Cool Counties had to do with studying things we're already doing, or why that drove or helped this process.
Cool Counties just sets
lot
the...
that we didn't know before as far as about what we're doing. Helping to understand where we are has been a big product of this, and helping educate and offer information to people who want it and the businesses who want it to improve their methods has been a great benefit as well.
I mean, it just seems to me a lot of this is common sense stuff. Most of the business people I know have been looking at energy efficiency and improving their bottom line long ago. And,
It helps to provide
some leadership, some forum where people can share ideas about how to best accomplish things that they may want to accomplish individually. And the fact is, we are old. You know, all of us, I believe, are well over 50 years old. Somebody said that earlier. You talk to these young guys coming out, starting businesses that have technology ideas, that want to spin ideas out of UVA, et cetera. I tell you, they want to live in a cool area. They want to live in an area that has some emphasis on the environment. Talk to any of them.
So they're self-reliant too, and they already know about this, and they need us to teach them how to do that.
It's important. Well, why do we do it? Why are we focusing on business? We got all this emphasis on economic development. Don't businesses know how to do it?
No, I mean, what we have. What,
no?
My emphasis.
I'll take that as your business doesn't.
Let me finish what I was going to say.
The point is, you want to step out and spend government resources and government time in areas where business actually exists. And because you want the county to take a leadership position in some of these things.
No, I don't.
I don't disagree with that.
That's not what I want to do. Now, let me explain. I've always felt that our involvement in business is to stay out of their way. Let them be innovative and don't get in the way of business doing things. And that's our only involvement. We don't create jobs.
What we do is create a regulatory environment
that they can flourish in.
That's why we have this big economic development program that we're spending an immense amount of staff time on is in government resources on is to – And to say that we're quote open for business is to just stay out of the way. Why do you need all this infrastructure and staff working on things to quote stay out of the way? You do it because you want Albemarle County. Part of your goal is for Albemarle County to be considered more business friendly, to be considered, and that's a perception issue. And this, a lot of showing that you care about the environment, has a perception part of it. You can either be a community, people say, well, they don't really give a darn about the environment. They don't do anything there. They're not part of any of these things. They don't show any leadership. They don't sponsor environmental forums, et cetera. Or you can be a community that shows some leadership.
So you think phrases and buzzwords make us demonstrate that we're community-friendly, or performing these kinds of things in the way we do our transaction?
What I'm saying is taking leadership. Well, you got buzzwords on the economic side, development side. You got all these buzzwords in your economic development plan. That's fine. But here, there is an importance to taking some community leadership in various areas. The environment, I think, being one of them. Maybe you disagree with that. That's fine.
I think we haven't really talked about the
that our citizens are very
the funds that will cost to take some of these initiatives. I mean, if the county is going to take initiative to do something, or mandate that other people do it, we better put a price tag on it so we can talk about it.
But remember, this is completely voluntary.
We're not
mandating anything.
So let's not throw out red herrings
here.
The Cool Counties Initiative, the LEAP program that came off of it, which got $1 million of federal funding, or $500,000 of private foundation funding, and another $500,000, I believe they've gotten.
Well, it's up to $4 million now.
Several millions is being spent in our community. We didn't spend a dime of that money. Alamar County didn't put any money into it.
Just a couple points of clarification. The LCAP report represents the first regional effort with government and business working together to set some principles that would be guidelines for the future. So that's really what you see in front of you on this slide. Albemarle County has been a leader for years. The city has taken a lot of leadership for years, too, in sustainability. This kind of gets our whole community on the same page. So that's what LCAP is all about. In terms of what it prescribes that we do, it sets out guidelines, and we can apply whatever resources to it that we want to, but that's a decision that this board will have to make. If you think these guidelines are good, you can go about it at whatever level you want to do, and that is very much what LCAP is trying to say. We got together. We've created some guidelines, some things that we think make sense in terms of moving these principles forward, but individually you will have to make the decisions about what's best for your community. I say that to say, as you contrast the resolution, it really did call for the Cool Counties about regional targets that will be established, and LCAP has really not set regional targets. They've instead provided some measures and guidelines that will help us move our program forward. So in a sense, it hasn't gone as far as maybe even Cool Counties had said. But that kind of sums up what we've got here, is this is a community-wide effort, which some of these principles are reflected in our comp plan already. But as a community, we've come together under these guidelines.
I want to make sure I'm clear that I'm not criticizing this report. In fact, I found this very interesting and very good. I'm just trying to, in my own mind, understand some pieces of it and some of the rationale behind it.
Definitely have moved forward on a lot of these things in the past. We've got some good demonstration projects and things.
But just one quick example about in the recommendations. Are there things that could be changed in our comp plan and in our policies that would enable green building to happen easier and better? And I think back to the Waldorf School, where they which was the very first day I was here, and the fact that they wanted to have a shed roof to collect rainwater had the Architectural Review Board standards were in competition with that, and so this was something that the board had to work through to make these kinds of changes, help us modernize our approach to things a little bit. And this is just the same background, same idea.
Well, I agree, and that's exactly what I'm talking about as far as us getting out of the way of free market decisions that people want to make. I think that, you know, if this is market driven, if the public has an interest in energy efficiency and LEED building and all like that, we should stay out of the way and let them move forward with it. Encourage them even.
Well, this is really what I think is encouraging people to do, is helping to provide some information.
But I don't think we should mandate it. That's the big.
Well, there's never been a mention of mandate.
The resolution doesn't have. The resolution doesn't have anything like that in there. Yeah. But that's what I've been sitting here reading.
Causing upset for no reason. Andy, go right ahead. Now that we've gotten you all off track.
I'm just going to breeze through a couple of these to get to something else. But we did, as the steering committee did, as a group, focus attention on some co-benefit aspects of emissions reductions. And these are listed here, and some of them are pretty obvious to you. Some of them may not be as obvious, but environmental, improving the local air quality. The financial and economic aspects, reducing the monthly bills of our residents and businesses, but that also trickles back into strengthening the local economy, either through contractors who do some of the work or through businesses that are used after the savings are absorbed. But also it just puts money back into our infrastructure. There are definitely health and leadership roles that the steering committee felt that the county, city, and UVA should participate in. The recommended principles put out in this report speaks on the same things. Continue the leadership, build on the existing synergies between the three entities supporting the community, projects and plannings associated with this issue, health, economic, environmental benefits. But this one really, the last one really keys in on also what the state of Virginia is doing to equip the community at all levels to make informed decisions about the impacts. And so this is actually one of the things that the Commonwealth, through a survey, saw that only about half of the individuals, residents of the Commonwealth, felt somewhat as they knew how energy and their use of energy really affected their bottom line, their bills, everything associated with that. And so as you see in some of the next documents, the Commonwealth also has objectives to reduce energy, but one of their main goals is to inform the citizenry of the Commonwealth. So that one was also a big one that both the businesses and residents, the steering committee felt needed this information. The big slide, what I want to focus on is the recommended next steps. The steering committee actually keyed in on two main next steps: act on existing commitments. This can be in the association with Cool Counties and an emissions reduction, but also internally we have an energy management and conservation plan, both with schools and local government. So does the city and UVA. So there's commitments that each entity has made, and steering committee felt that these existing commitments need to be furthered, but also build on stakeholder involvement developed through this. The community came together to speak on these issues and to get information, and building on that was something that was seen as a big deal with the steering committee. Acting on these commitments, steering committee felt that comprehensive plan and other planning efforts was a way to solidify some of our efforts. And as you said, a lot of these efforts have been done, and it's more of a reconfirmation of those commitments. Action planning, identifying near-term goals. As we'll talk about in Cool Counties, that is a long-term goal to reduce emissions. And it actually talks about, as Mr. Foley said, setting near and midterm goals, and those goals can be more about energy or emissions on a 2022 level, 2030, and it can be various percentages or units. So there's flexibility in this. We have a long-term goal of 2050 with 80%, but to meet that, it may be 10% by 2022, and then another 30% by 2030. So it's a building type effort, but also to regularly update on progress towards reducing these emissions. Celebrating the local successes, like you said, businesses have been doing this. You look on TV commercials, HVAC businesses, builders, they're all talking green energy or energy efficiencies. We have LEED structures, Earthcraft homes. This is celebrating those local successes. We do it as a county government. Also, the private industry does it. And so, as you saw with the steering committee, they were representing the private entities, and they want those local successes celebrated. But they also know that they don't have all the information. They know that they need toolkits and information. So part of the recommendations is to build on what they called the framework action strategies, to develop toolkits for residents, businesses, all community members to use, and that leads into the community engagement. Real quickly, the Better Business Challenge that we had a resolution last month about, that has about 65 local businesses quickly jumped on board to have energy efficiencies in their business process, reducing energy, reducing waste, reducing water. But they, one of the first things they said, they need resources, they need information. They didn't know how to do it. They're running a business. LEAP also sees the same thing with residents. They have a life to live. They don't know the HVAC systems. This is a resource. Also, our economic development team, city, county, both participated in the small business development workshop, which was about energy efficiencies and understanding utility bills. It was well received, and the businesses really enjoyed it. This just really summarizes the products, recommended principles, recommended next steps, and then the action strategies associated with those five sectors. And this is in the report, and you can read it and identify things that you like or dislike. But that's what it was put out there as, is as strategies. You don't have to, you can take them whole cloth and take every one of them, but you can pick out ones that make sense for your community. And that's what the steering committee really wanted, for each community to be able to pick and choose where they wanted to focus their energy. And so as you see with the executive summary, there was recommendations made, and part of that is considering the principles and next steps as guidance and direction associated with energy and emissions reductions, utilizing existing resources that and mechanisms that we have in place right now to achieve reductions in energy use and emissions, and using the five-part framework and framework action strategies to evaluate and promote to and encourage all residents, community members, and ourselves on commitments. And so I'm done.
I had a question. You say in the report that only the county and the city are only responsible for 4% of the emissions for the community as a whole. Where's the other 96%?
That's the municipal buildings as opposed to private-owned ones. So that 4% is schools and local government, the buildings that are part of our government structure.
Cars, for example, you know, there's a huge component, which is transportation. To the extent to which you improve your transit system, you get people off of the roads, and the extent to which we convert vehicles to something other than gas burning, hybrids, biodiesel, et cetera, you reduce emissions and you help satisfy that goal. You know, there are areas where we can lead, and there are areas where we can't. We just but it helps to provide. You know, I think one of the things they emphasize here are toolkits. Provide information to people so they can make their choices and save themselves the most money, and at the same time reduce emissions. We can provide this group has been a catalyst for meetings. Educational information getting out that not only reduces emissions but helps people in the community save money.
I like the recommended principles and the recommended next steps. I think they're right on point.
I think, Mr. Doyle, you made a good comment the other just a few minutes ago. Is before we decide on this, what's the cost? I mean, what these next steps and these and promoting these principles. I mean, obviously your salary is involved in it. There's other people's salaries involved in it. If there's going to be staff time devoted to it, there's printing brochures. There's, I mean, are we going to start a big marketing campaign? Is the county supposed to take the lead in telling people how they need to make their homes energy efficient? Is sleep going to take care of that? Is, you know, I mean, I those are the questions that I have from your report. Is that, you know, are we talking about a $100,000 investment of county taxpayer dollars in promoting this, or? I mean,
I think that's a good question. I think today what you have before you is whether you think these principles make sense for guidance. Mm-hmm. Doesn't commit you to how much money you're going to spend on any of it. Some of it would just be collaborative efforts. But if you're saying, before I sign off on principles, I'd like to know exactly what you're going to do over the next 5 years to implement all these principles, that would take a whole lot more effort. We thought we would come through those with five-year planning and annual budget.
But the problem is we as a board sort of sign off on these principles, and then the staff sort of takes it and runs with it, and we never really know how much it did cost us or what direction it took you in, because you're trying to do the best you can to abide by the principles we establish. And, you know, I'm not interested in spending a lot of money to come up with a cost justification. That's partly should have been what this group was doing. The LCAP group should have come up with that already, if it was an important aspect of it.
I think by design they said we won't go to that extent. We'll just provide you what we think the community agrees through the LCAP process are good principles to follow, but the degree to which you implement this and how much you spend is completely up to you. So, again, the issue before you is the recommendations that we have here on guiding principles and strategies. But we would then use those to come back to you and say, based on these principles, this would be an expenditure that we would suggest, and you can say yes or no to that. But again, it depends on what you want to have before you to make this decision. We think it's really endorsing these principles doesn't commit you to a certain level of spending, but it will certainly give us guidance on what we bring to you in terms of any new initiatives in the future.
We have something every year called the budget, where we make decisions about how we spend the money. And you know, there are many principles in the comprehensive plan. And it's helpful to go back and look at those every now and then, and or when we get a report from staff saying, well, this helps meet your goals of X, Y, and Z. It may be a decision about, you know, where to locate something, or, you know, what, I mean, there are many decisions we make that if you, when we get staff reports, they try to say, well, this helps meet your goals A, B, and C. Whether or not you allocate separate resources for those things is a budget decision every year.
No, but your job was created before Cool Counties, right? Well, you weren't in it, but the job that you now serve in was created before that, and that
That's
had
correct.
To do with energy efficiency and environmental stewardship.
So there was no increase in staff expenditure as a result of adopting Cool Counties.
I know, but we didn't need Cool Counties to establish that job and start this position. That's the point I'm trying to make, Dennis. That was an expenditure that was based on some. It certainly didn't come to us to say we're going to put X number of dollars in the budget for this particular position. It was, I guess, Mr. Tucker felt that it was a direction we wanted to head in, and so he put that in his budget, and it was all the other stuff.
Tremendous community support for environmental stewardship for years.
You had a board that was much more environmentally oriented, in my opinion, than the board we have today.
And I don't know how you can say that, Dennis.
Well,
I mean, because I don't agree with your methodology, and it's not as environmentally friendly.
So the board provided that guidance. It wasn't staff driven.
Yeah, but
whether or not we should spend any money at all on environmental issues in the community is a decision we make every year at budget time, hopefully we'll continue to devote some resources to environmental issues.
Oh, I agree. We should.
These things are important for collaboration purposes. They're important for providing, I think, some perception among our regional partners, among our state partners, that we are a community that has an interest in this area. When we talk about targets, Mr. Snow's over there and Ms. Malik with their iPads. I guarantee you that 10 years ago, neither of them would have imagined they would be able to be sitting there with a little tablet computer that they could pull down all the information they pull down. There are people out there inventing ways to improve energy use, et cetera, that will come to market 5-10 years from now that will reduce energy consumption, reduce emissions, et cetera, that we don't even dream of today. So when we talk about 30-40-year targets, it's a long iterative process. Now, whether or not there are no mandatory objectives being put on anybody. Every year we make a decision at budget time whether we want to allocate funds. But the question is are we a community that recognizes that we're part of a larger world and that what we do in this community has an impact on the larger world. You know, states are made up of towns and cities and counties make up states. States make up countries, and countries make up the world. And by creating some kind of by making our area an area that is clearly has an interest in protecting the environment and participating with our neighbors in doing that, and helping take some leadership role in those areas. I think it's a good thing.
But you see, Dennis, my problem with that is that you know, we both want the same objectives. We have different approaches of getting there, and that's where we disagree. It's not the fact that I don't want us to be environmentally sensitive and good stewards of our environment, because I've always wanted that. I compost, I recycle, I've got rain barrels, I do all those things. I take personal responsibility for being an environmentally good steward. I just don't see that government has to take the lead role in this, because those inventions that you're talking about, they're going to come out of the private sector. They're not going to come out of government.
A lot of them will come out of universities, and a lot of them will come out of university funding.
Well, that's still because of private partnerships.
And a lot of them will require some kind of government subsidy in the early stages to ever make it.
Let me just – some other benefits, just because I think it's important to remember what this effort might achieve for us. I mean, first of all, we're talking about the way our community is perceived in the Google world. And if a company is saying, gee, where do I want to put my new factory, just like we had a chance to get somebody who we didn't find a spot for just 2 months ago, but they came and they found us at Alamo County because of our reputation that would match theirs. They had a very strong environmental ethic and sustainability ethic, and they wanted to put their name in a place that wasn't contrary to that. We are not all by ourselves in this whole effort. Governor McDonald, the Commonwealth of Virginia Energy Plan and the state legislature directs efforts to researching cost benefits of sequestering greenhouse gases. The state is tasked with trying to facilitate energy reductions by its residents. These are things coming from the governor's office. He's having another energy conference in October to try to help with this. The Green Building Council, at their luncheon and annual meeting 3 or 4 weeks ago, universally those folks said, even in this down economy, we are working as fast as we can work, because it's helped people to focus on the kinds of small improvements they can make with their own homes and businesses. So this is a very viable part
I'm sorry, who did you say?
These were folks that I spoke with at the Green Building Council luncheon over at City Space, and they had some presentations from state-level people.
Who's the Green Building? I mean, is that a
private
organization?
Well, it's a bunch of individual people who have formed a club for themselves, and they bring in speakers.
You didn't need government to do that for it.
Well, I don't think this report is representing the fact that government is going to take the lead on anything. I think this is creating a chapter in our county history that says we think these things are important. We think that it's going to benefit our community as a whole. And I do want to focus just on one paragraph in the letter from the steering committee that is attached to this note, this report. If we learned anything during this process, we learned that we want to take a positive approach to suggesting ways for lowering our community's energy consumption and thus greenhouse gas emissions. Who would disagree with saving money and creating jobs by making our buildings more energy efficient? All of us would like to spend less time in our cars and more time with our friends and families. New technologies that can help us create energy with less pollution are important to support. In general, the old adage, waste not, want not, is probably true when it comes to the things we buy, use, and throw away. Wise conservation of our natural infrastructure is necessary to ensure that we have environmental services like the work that forests do to protect our water supplies and help us with stormwater control. So these are things that this very diverse group of folks on the steering committee used to sum up why they felt this was so important and why it's worth a lot of their time for a long time to try to gather up this kind of information. It's not saying that everybody has to go out and do anything. And I think it's really unfair that people try to turn this into a mandatory thing of any sort, because the very first meeting of the committee, people talked about how these things were going to be a non-starter if it was required. You will do this and this and this. As far as the members on the community, they said we won't be able to represent our constituents as the Home Builders Association or the Chamber or the environmental group or whatever, saying we have to come up with a set of rules.
Madam Chair, the specific recommendations of the staff are before you that I think try to clarify what this is and what it's not and what's before you. Certainly you can take a different action, but we tried to capture the work of this government and business group that got together to set some principles and guidelines together, which really are not mandatory. So we really are...
Do you have that on a slide, what those recommendations are?
Yeah, you have the recommendations. I don't know. They're right before you under recommendations
on the board.
That.
They're on the board.
Consider
the LCAP principles, next step, Scott. Utilize existing resources.
Okay.
Use the five-part framework to evaluate and prioritize additional actions.
But I mean, who's going to do this? Is this the government's to do this? Is there a committee to do it?
It's going to be the three different agencies with their own staff doing stuff. I think it's going to be a way to just look forward. But I don't see we're going to hire more people to work with Andy and focus our county attention on this. I think it's
just
going to carry itself.
Just to clarify, and I apologize that we didn't put these on the screen. That we didn't put these on the screen, but they are right before you in words if you've got that. And I know sometimes with the iPad. But the first recommendation is really just to accept the principles and next steps. So we're saying establish some principles that would then guide what we do in the future, which would have to come back to you. The second is really just to continue current efforts, utilize current resources to do the things we've already been doing, to continue moving forward with them. And the third is really just to promote progress and to continue to talk about these things. It's for the opportunity it'll create for us and for the community to save money and do those things. So I guess I just want to clarify what you have before you. If you want to go in a different direction, create a different recommendation, you can do that. But this is what we put in there based upon the work of this group as a concluding recommendation.
I'm not sure I know what that all means, is what I'm trying to tell you. Does that mean that we, the County of Albemarle, along with the city and the university, are going to take a lead role in educating the public on these principles that we've decided they need to be educated on, educating the business community on? Are we going to keep the LCAP group together, and are they going to be the ones that do it, and we'll just support it with staff? Is Albemarle County going to do something? Are we going to look at comprehensive plan changes and put the community development department looking at things that we need to change in the comprehensive plan? I mean,
those would be the next steps.
I got to get flushed out.
Those would be the next steps. Right now, if your support of the principles that you've seen and that we've covered is contingent upon how all of those will be implemented, we would have to come back to you.
There's nothing in what Ms. Malik read out that I am opposed to. In fact, I encourage you to think that they're common sense issues, you know, about being good stewards of our environment. The only difference is how do we get there? I mean, and what role does government play in that as opposed to the private sector or the public, you know, nonprofit sector? I mean,
I think we can encourage this group, and I'm in support of the principles and recommended next steps. I think the committee looks very well balanced and appears to have a good report. So I think we should get on board and support them.
I don't disagree, but what are those next steps?
I'm going to move that we adopt the recommendations that are contained here. They're summarized on the board in front of us. They do not involve committing any additional dollars right now. It specifically says using existing resources and mechanisms to strategically realize a range of benefits. I think it's important that we participate with the university, with the city, in trying to make this a better place to live for our citizens. And this is one way we do it. And it's not, we're not talking about any dollar commitment today. If the staff has any ideas that they want to bring back that require any dollar commitments, we evaluate them.
If that's what your motion is that any kind of staff or dollar investment will be come back and discussed with this group, and sure, can't be opposed to this.
This is local, and we are local.
I think that's what we've been discussing all along. We want to keep this local,
sure.
And I think this is a good local program. It involves our community partners, and I support it.
Let's get on board.
We got a second. Is there a second?
Yes, second.
Okay. We're not going to get lunch if we don't move.
This is Malik.
Yes. Good education. I'll buy
it. Mr. Rooker?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Mr. Snow?
Yes.
Mr. Boyd?
Yes.
Mr. Doyen?
Yes.